Welcome to School for Startups Radio. We don't have time today for all of the introduction. We got to jump right in because we have a huge show. First up, Mike O'Neill with Mosquito Nicks is going to talk about that incredible franchise. Justin Buonamono is going to talk about his journey to financial freedom and how you can do the same thing. And then we have in a greatest hits feature, the superstar Brian Tracy. No one gets bigger than him. So it's a great show. We're going to go ahead and get started. Here we go. Nothing ruins the summer like the mosquitoes. And so I'm excited to introduce Mike O'Neill. He is president of Mosquito Nicks, which is based out of Florida. He has worked there most of his career over the last decade and brings a contagious level of motivation to his role there. Mike, welcome to the show. How are you doing?
Hey, good morning, Jim. Great. Thanks for having us. Looking forward to talk more.
Yes. So Mosquito Nicks, tell us about it.
You know, you heard it in the name, like you said, one of those annoying bugs, mosquitoes. So Mosquito Nicks, we've been around for 20 years and it's a very much a family business. So a lot of times, when you see a brand, there's a lot behind that name. And with our family, we've been doing it almost 20 years. And as you said, Jim, I've been doing it 15 years myself from the operations side. So definitely what we're known for is our permanent misting systems, but and our smart system technology. But love to tell you more about that.
I don't know what those are. So tell me about those.
Yeah. So, you know, in the, you said mosquito space. So the typical approach is most people are their bug person, you know, sprays on a biweekly basis and you know, say a couple of prayers and hope it lasts for a long time. So where we came from in 2003, we started in Dallas, Texas, and in the outdoor insect misting space. And we didn't invent that space. It actually started in the horse barn industry in West Texas. I'm originally from Dallas, Texas. And so these outdoor misting systems were in the the horse space for the flies. And in 2003, we launched it in Dallas, Texas, in the residential space. And it took on like wildfire. And why is because people weren't used to a permanent misting system. And the analogy we like to use, Jim, is it's very similar to an irrigation system that sprays on intervals. And for our system, it goes off at dusk and dawn when they're most active. And for our systems, it's not just mosquitoes. I always joke it should be called bug nicks. But any fighting, biting insect, which is typically the annoying ones, fleas, ticks, spiders, a wide range of insects. But flies is one of our biggest draws, not just was in Texas, but as you know, in across the country, especially with restaurants, it's been a big draw overall. So that's where was our biggest difference with Mosquito Nicks. As you know, where most people know pest control has been around 100 years. So we just take a smart technology approach, totally different angle than what most people are used to hearing.
And so these are sprayers that go on, say, the edge of a trellis or something like that?
Yes. Yeah, so envision anybody that, number one, you know, invests in their outdoor space that's commercial or residential who just need protection. And why I say it that way is because how these systems work, Jim, is we have to create a perimeter of these misters around the coverage area. So a lot of people at horse barns particularly are always saying, yeah, we have 100 acres. Well, we always start backwards. Hey, where do you spend your most time? Where do you invest your most energy with your family, with your employees? And it's typically the typical answer you get is around my patio, around my pool area. At the senior living facilities, we have this built out area. We create these a perimeter. So every 10 to 15 feet, envision you have a mister going around that area and it sprays at dusk and dawn for 45 seconds. And then you have a remote control that's on an app. So if, like, for example, at restaurants, usually the general managers will hit that remote occasionally before happy hour events and it gives you another reprieve. So that's how the system works. One of the biggest difference for us, Jim, is we use a product that's not toxic. So we're one of the only companies that builds our own products and has their own solution. So that's very uncommon in the pest control space because most people use pyrethroids and insecticides. So I would say that's probably our biggest difference, but the misting system is definitely obviously the biggest differentiator.
All right. And this is a franchise, correct?
As of 3 years ago. Yep. So we launched, we technically launched 2 years ago, but we've, are in the franchise space as well. So the 20 years is operational, closely held company, which is rare for franchising. Most people have a concept, have some, you know, 2 to 3 years operations and then franchise, which I always say it's not fair to franchise owners. They're basically beta testing on you. So we have 20 years of operational experience running Mosquito Nicks, but we just started launching franchising.
And what does that look like? Tell us about the package.
Yeah. So if you're typically on the shelf of franchising, you know, they have all these different types of models. Ours is more the home service, you know, guy in a truck, girl in a truck model, and for low cost. So when you look at Mosquito Nicks on the shelf, very similar to all the typical home services where we try to keep, you know, your costs down. However, with our actual franchise system, we have a few different things that isn't typical. We offer, it's called a customer acquisition center. So our old model, when I opened up in Jacksonville in 2016, we hired 3 outdoor salespeople, clerical people, all that's gone away. And we've evolved since 2016. And we have a full customer acquisition center it comes with that we only pay, you only pay a selling commission when things are sold. We have, like I was saying, the safe and effective solution that's new as of 8 years ago. But the actual franchise business, we're one of the biggest in the home services space. So you're most are like 20,000 households. We offer it for 60,000 household territories, Jim. It's and our reason for that is for success. Our main objective are franchise owners to make profitability every single time. So it's a very attractive, and it shows that as of the last 2 years ago, we sold almost 42 territories year to date, just in the last year and a half.
Wow, 42. That's very impressive. Mm-hmm.
Great owners too. So we're very, I always say it's a two-way street. Has to be a good partnership both ways. So we're almost tell too much, Jim. I say for the, because we don't want people to have buyer's remorse. So when someone comes through the process, you're going to meet with our sales team, hear about all the pros and cons of the, you know, Mosquito Nicks, and see if it's the right fit for you. And then when you come to our Meet the Team days, you're meeting my wife and our team here in Jacksonville to see, hey, is it the right partnership, right? Because the whole thing about franchising is to mitigate business risk. You have processes. And at the end of the day, we just want to make sure these owners, you know, are on the right track, open up the business. So.
And what is the training focus on?
Training, it's a wide range of things. You know, I'm the one thing I have not mentioned is one of our part of the business we do is holiday lighting and decor. We call the elves. So part of the training, you're going to get a 3-day full-on business training from P&L coaching, how to run your office on the day-to-day. So that's 3 days. And then when you come to Jacksonville, it's 5 full days of hands-on, knowing how to do the installations, knowing how to put up your lights. So when you go back, you can handle a big commercial client. You can handle the objections and questions that you get about the pest control industry. So it's very in tuned. So when people leave here, we're not just throwing you out in the water. The one thing we have is a ton, we call it the Buzz. It's a learning management system. Hundreds and hundreds of videos of short snippets on, if you're in the field and want a quick answer, you just type it into the Buzz, spit you back a pretty cool video of if you forgot something at the technical training. And then from there on out, you're meeting us every week on lots of things. So I always joke, the franchise owners always say, hey, we're going to give us a little breathing room. Let us fly.
That's a good one. And how long does it take to get up to speed and get ready to start?
So if you sign, like, for example, if you see us and you're interested, we always say from signing, it's about a 10 to 12 week onboarding process, which is very fast, but we don't do it recklessly. But the 10 to 12 weeks is to ensure it's a fire hose of information, but it's everything's done in a proper process day in, day out to open. So when you go home, you're having installations teed up. So that's from the marketing, your grand openings getting set up, your Google My Business pages, anything regarding a business opening, those 10 to 12 weeks is, I say, a fire hose, because once you leave technical training, which is the 11th week of that onboarding, typically, the next, that following week, the goal is you're putting missing systems in or you're installing holiday lights. So it's very, I always say, when people leave technical training, I always remind them, hey guys, this is your first day of opening. Because the 10 to 12 weeks will feel like a year, because it's just so much in a loaded time.
Right. What's the buying decision based upon? Who makes this decision? Is this a mom decision or a dad decision? And how do you pitch this product to the best? How does it sell?
Yeah, so that's a great question. So I think I'll circle back to the customer acquisition center. So we obviously, with our product, it's a permanent product. It comes with an investment. For a client, it can range on average $3,200 for this installation. And then they're paying a maintenance service on a monthly basis. So it is an investment, but the typical client, we always say, is they invest in their outdoor space and they see value in their outdoor space. We obviously have business personas that say, you know, over a certain demographic and certain households, but usually the decision makers, it is, you're going to have a husband, wife, usually have partner approval. But the beauty of the customer acquisition center is pressure point. Is it the ticks? Is it the fleas? They're trying to say, where do you spend most of your time? And they build out a custom project. And then typically what happens, we usually sell it on that video consultation. We collect credit card, the client acquisition center, and then the franchise owners the next day or same day have a ticket to go install it. It is easy as that.
So the reason I asked about both homeowners having to be there, have you ever bought windows?
Luckily I have not, but I do know the price point for windows.
But the salespeople, they come to your door and ring the doorbell. Would you like new windows? We see your windows are really old. Oh yeah, I was in the market. And then they require that both of the homeowners, mom and dad, are home. Just like the timeshare salespeople in Las Vegas.
Of course.
Because I think it's just part of the scam that both homeowners are there. You know what I mean?
We take everything out of sales that most people don't like. Meaning clients don't want to have a car salesman, calling them every 5 minutes.
A guy who brought a pizza into our house to sell us windows, and we couldn't get him to leave at 9 o'clock. He was still there at 9 o'clock at night.
I'll paint the perfect picture. This is what typically happens. Husband or wife, one of them gets bit, or kids or dogs with ticks and fleas. Husband or wife or partner reaches out to the sales team without the other person knowing. They set up a video consult for 15 minutes. The partner typically sitting in the background without our sales team even knowing with it for the first 5 to 10 minutes. The last 5 minutes, all of a sudden you have the partner asking 1,000 questions because they don't want to be on camera, but they're hearing the responses on the video consult. So like you just said it, people don't want people in their yard houses anymore doing sales bids. Nope. They don't even want to have to talk to someone and very much even go through a video consultation. So our sales team does such a good job of reading the room. So if you just want a price and want to see your house, and they'll read the room and do it. If you have someone who wants to be more elaborate, get into the specifics of the solution that's spraying, does this actually work? Our team's going to do it to close the deal for these franchise owners. And that's the beauty of the sales team. Jim, if you're a franchise owner, most are another business they're opening. They don't know Mosquito at all day one. So day one of opening a franchise, you have a full sales team that's already capable of handling these objections. So it's very unique in the franchise space, where most franchise businesses, the owner operator or managers are doing it all. And it's just not a sustainable model. Not saying it can't work. It just, that's the beauty of that room. And you only pay 8% commission when a sale is sold and installed. So very unique.
Yeah, interesting model. I like that. Mm-hmm. Does the stuff kill the bugs or just make them go away?
It kills it. So it's not, so why we came up with this solution. So in the pest control space, pyrethroids has been something that the EPA has been trying to outlaw for honestly the last 20 years. And so we knew this about 10 years ago, we had to come up with a solution that's not just safe, but you nailed it, but effective. And so it's not just a repellent, it's actually killing these insects. There's a lot more behind the science, but essentially it's dehydrates them and kills them. The specific insects our labs goes after. So the ones I listed at the beginning of this call are the ones we go after. So when it comes to pollinators, bees, butterflies, we've actually installed systems at a bee farm, which is, to be honest with you, I was a little nervous for the first time because I've been doing this for 15 years. That was our first real pilot of, hey, this stuff is safe. And so that was a very rare thing for pest control to have something like that.
Yeah, that's amazing that you put it at a beef place. Mm-hmm. Unbelievable.
Yeah. Cool.
And how big are the territories? So I saw here that Atlanta has a franchise. Did they get the whole city or half the city, or how does that work?
So typically what it's 60,000 households at 100,000 median income and up. So if in our space, you have the mosquito space, pest control space, they're typically an eighth of that size for a territory. So I'll use Jacksonville, for example, just because that's where I'm located. We would be three territories. And so that's roughly 180,000 households with 100,000 median income and up. And so for our home services space, we're considered very big. But why we did that, you know, when we were creating the franchise FTD, was all we care about these people making profits. And if you build an FTD that's very small territories and you're requiring owners to have to buy multiple territories just, you know, go service in other areas, we just did not think that was fair. And so these large territories just allow these owners to have more success with, you know, marketing bigger areas.
That makes sense. I like that. Mm-hmm. Well, Mike, it's a great idea. I want one of these for my backyard for sure. And I love the model. So congratulations. Well done.
No, thank you.
How do we find out more? Get in touch.
Yep. So the most, for franchising, if you're out there trying to consider, do you all want to be in franchising? The easiest way is go to www.mosquitonix.com. There's a tab for franchising. If you're like you, Jim, who just is interested in our service, or if you know somebody, just go to our website. There you can call, text, or submit a form. Trying to, like you said, whatever easiest way to communication, that's our goal. So looking forward to help you guys out.
Fantastic. Thank you so much, Mike, and congratulations.
All right, Jim, appreciate it.
And we'll be right back. Bye-bye. We are back and still so greatly appreciative that you are with us. Very excited to introduce my first guest today. This conversation could go in a lot of different ways, so I'm excited to see what happens. Please welcome Justin Buonomono to the show. He is the founder and CEO of Journey to Financial Freedom. It is obviously a coaching program that helps individuals build wealth, and it has a biblical twist to it. It is a believer organization, and stewardship is therefore part of their formula. Justin also has a podcast where he breaks down a lot of financial issues. I discovered that on Amazon, on his Amazon page, believe it or not. Justin, welcome to the show. How are you doing?
Thank you, my friend, for having me. I'm doing really well. I'm excited to be here. And again, thank you for having me, and I'm excited to dive in.
My pleasure. So, what is the number one problem you see with clients of yours, clients at the Financial Freedom? What do you call Journey to Financial Freedom? You don't call it that all the time. What's the short name of it?
We call it JFF. I don't even think people know what JFF stands for. That's close to the company, because that's basically what everybody knows it by. So JFF for short.
Excellent. What's the problem people come there have? What's the issue you're seeing?
Yeah. So the general one is, I just think that people are just never taught how to manage money correctly. And then in the faith-based space, you find a lot of misconceptions around money, which then hinder our relationship and results with money. And so we often say that we help faith-based individuals who feel stuck with their finances learn how to manage money in a way that glorifies God, aligned with biblical principles, but without all of that outdated, fearful, and restrictive feelings finances usually bring on people.
All right. What are they fearful of? What does that fear come from?
Yeah, a lot of times just usually from our childhood conditioning. I actually have a podcast episode being released today about this, where most of our beliefs, right, and thoughts, but let's just say belief systems around things were produced in our childhood, right? It's called childhood conditioning, right? The environment that we grew up in has strongly dictated the way that we think about things. And so, unfortunately, we run into people, even faith-based or not, that just have a very poor misconception around money. And their parents were very fearful with the topic, like mine, a big part of my story. And then because of that, they inherited that unnecessary and irrational fear when it comes to the topic of money.
Yes. You said something that kind of made me interesting. You mentioned faith and some of the people who are preaching about money. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Some of them are very bad and some of them are mm-hmm. good, right? Can we agree on yeah. that?
1,000%. Can we agree on it? We could talk about it for 2 days.
All right. So the two or three names come to mind, like
sure.
the guy with the hair.
Yep. Sure. I guess I could tie in who you're talking about, but I think the issue is right. It's either I find in the faith-based space that people follow prosperity gospel or they follow poverty gospel, right? Prosperity gospel is kind of what you're alluding to, right? Where people think that you can earn God's favor, or we treat God like a vending machine. Like I just created a post recently, like God's not a vending machine. You don't put in the tithe and get out a Tesla. It's kind of like, it's acting like God owes us something, or that we can earn his favor. And if we just do our part and play good, right, then God will bless us in return. And that's not biblical, right? And then the other issue is, what's even more prevalent is poverty gospel, which is like people follow one of the most misconstrued Bible verses of all time, where they say money is the root of all evil, right? Or they just think all money's bad, or that they just misinterpret a lot of, I think, the scripture and warnings around money. And then in turn, they think that it's, deeply spiritual to be poor and avoid money at all costs. And both of these are missing the mark. And unfortunately, the majority of people in the faith-based community fall into one of these buckets, if you will.
Is it okay to have a lot of wealth in your understanding of the Bible?
1,000%. It's just the heart posture that... 1,000%, absolutely. So it's the heart posture that matters. And so let me back up here a little bit. And I mentioned one of the most misconstrued Bible verses of all time. And that is when people say money is the root of all evil. That's not what the Bible verse says. If you actually look at the Bible verse, the most important part is left out of that misconception, which is the love of money is the root of all evil. And if you dive into the biblical translation of the word love and how they use it in that phrase, it means to idolize something. And you can only idolize one thing at a time. So if you're idolizing money, guess who you're not leaving room for? God. And so God doesn't hate money. He doesn't want us to be poor. He hates greed. He hates us idolizing things, right, that are not him. And unfortunately, money is usually one of those things that we put on the throne here on earth instead of God. And so it is okay to have a lot of money and be wealthy, but the key is in the character. The key is in your heart. And that's why Matthew 6:33 is so important, where it says, first seek the kingdom of God and all these other things will be given to you. And what that means is, if you're seeking God with authenticity, because you truthfully believe it's in the best interest of you and your family and going to help grow the kingdom, then God's going to refine your heart. And when he refines your desire, or refines your heart, he then refines your desires, right? So he knows then after that, if that type of refined person is given large sums of money, that they're going to use it for the most part in ways that are good, in most parts that are way that are for the kingdom and not for selfish needs and selfish desires and greed. And so the key is in the character. Money doesn't change your character. It just magnifies it. And I think if you seek God authentically and let him refine your heart, then all that's going to be magnified through money is that beautiful, refined heart. Does that make sense?
It does. So back to JFF. How does that work? Do you have clients that have one-on-one coaching, or do you only work at big groups or speak at churches? How does the message get out, Justin? And how do you encounter your payers?
Yeah, absolutely. So we have a financial coaching program called the Good Steward Program, and it's been around for about 5 years now. We've actually had upwards of 600-700 people go through it, and we've got about 100 active people in it right now. And so over the years, we've really just learned how to build a hybrid model, if you will, when it comes to the delivery of our services to make sure that people are getting best results, right? Because I think back then, you know, when coaching programs first started, it was like either one-on-ones, or then people scaled to group product, or just buying a self-paced course, or just buying into a community. We're a blend of all of them. So inside of our program, you get a ton of one-on-one work with your own client success coach. There also are multiple group sessions each week. There's a community platform so you can network with and get support from other like-minded people. We've got a 15-module course that you can binge as you please, or we direct you on how to consume. And then all of the recordings from 4 or 5 years of group sessions that are available as well, and then our resource library where you can access our budget template, our balance sheet template, and all these other awesome analyses or our systems and tools for your finances. So it's a hybrid of a lot of things, and we just learn that that type of format is what gets people best results, particularly when it comes to their finances.
All right, what problems do they have when they come to you? Are they spending too much with debt? Is that the status quo, the normal?
Yeah. So the main problems that we see like tangibly are, you know, they're in a little bit more debt than they want to be in, and they have a poor mindset around it and don't know how to approach it. Their savings account isn't where they want it to be. And then mainly a lot of times, like in the internal world, right, they've just got negative, fearful, limiting beliefs about money. And that's kind of what's then starting to reflect in their external world, if you will. And so to answer your question clearly, when people come to us, they've got definitely money mindset issues, right? Belief issues, which are just what caused the behaviors in the first place. And the behavior side of stuff is there's usually some debt that they're, you know, overwhelmed with or confused on how to tackle, and a savings account that isn't growing the way that they want. And they just don't feel like they're in control of their money. And, you know, either they're spending too much or they're super scared to spend. And so we kind of help them find that happy medium.
All right. What are some of the financial principles that you teach?
Let's get into
the tools, actually.
Yeah, absolutely. And so from a principle perspective, what kind of comes to mind is we teach a four-step process for financial freedom. And I'll talk maybe about the first two here for the most part. And so the first one is, you know, we want to create a better mindset around money. Like I said earlier, you know, your external wealth is just a reflection of your internal wealth, and the behaviors that show up on paper or in your bank account are just direct results of the beliefs that you carry. And so when we say we're a coaching company, we all actually are certified. And I tell people that, like, think about us as like a blend between a financial advisor and a money therapist, if you will, that's rooted in biblical wisdom. And so, you know, we got to start at the belief level. And then when it comes to like a foundational standpoint, like, I'm a big believer in budgeting, but budgeting from a very simple standpoint. Our budgeting system only takes 1 to 3 minutes a day, and it should empower you to live your life, spend your money a little bit, and make financial progress at the same time. So that's a very big principle of mine. And then from there, just making sure we're laying the foundation. And so the foundations are like the first three goals we tell people that may be in their best interest to work on if they don't have them accomplished, is having the proper emergency fund saved away, being able to pay off bad debt and leverage good debt responsibly, and then a little bit looser than the first two, but owning a home instead of renting for the long term. And so those are just some of the principles that, like, we start with to build a strong foundation, which I think is the overarching principle here, is like, if you want to build true wealth, you got to lay it on a strong foundation. And that's where we start.
Tell us the entrepreneurial story that, you know, that you used to get here. How'd you get started? How'd you get the idea for this? Walk us through the beginning time.
Yeah, absolutely. So I actually have an MBA with a focus in healthcare management. And before this business started, I worked in healthcare administration for Johns Hopkins Medicine. And so I worked on the business side of the hospitals. And so I had some incredible experience there. For people that don't know that are listening, Johns Hopkins Medicine is like the best healthcare institution in the world. And they are an $8 to $9 billion business at the end of the day. And, you know, just getting to learn from inside of that big business business and run pieces of it and report to some incredible people gave me a very strong business acumen. I started to really learn a lot about business. And my last position that I was at Johns Hopkins, I was the physician manager for one of our community hospitals inside the network. And at a young age of like 26 or 27, I was overseeing hundreds and hundreds of doctors and had millions and millions of dollars in financial responsibility. And I reported directly to the president of the hospital. And it was an amazing experience, especially at such a young age. But I had about an hour commute each day to and from, and I would just listen to a ton of podcasts. And Ed Milet was one of the podcasts that I constantly listened to. And I heard his branding and marketing team talk a while ago. And they were like, your business. And at this time, I was very curious to start a business because I had a great day job. I paid a ton, but something was missing. And I hated somebody else controlling my time, my money, and my energy. And so I was like, I need to figure out how to start my own thing. And Ed Milet's team said that your business is at the intersection of your passion and your expertise. And at the time, I had a good expertise in finances and a passion for helping other people. And my past, you know, I have a sweet spot for finances, if you will, because my parents filed for bankruptcy when I was 10 years old, and it led to a lot of hardship for us, you know, for decades afterwards. And so that's kind of where, you know, the wheel started turning, the ideas started coming about. And what I did is I tell a lot of the business owners that I work with now is I just took on 5 free clients. I was like, let me see if this works. I just need your promise that you're actually going to stay committed. Give me a testimonial at the end and, you know, help me build proof of concept here. And that's kind of how the snowball all started getting rolling there.
Ooh, that's a great idea. I love it. Good advice. How'd that work out? You got 5 and they stayed all the way through?
Yeah, 4 out of the 5 stayed all the way through, which was awesome odds. But then the craziest part, though, Jim, was that the one referred me to who is now today our biggest referral partner. So I'm happy to say names. Tiffany was one of my friends that I worked with at Johns Hopkins, who I took on as a free client. She introduced me to now one of my very good friends, Kelly Brock. And Kelly Brock, over the past 5 years, has sent us north of $1.5 million in business. And she was a referral from one of the free people I took on in the beginning. So it worked out fairly well.
That is great. Jeremy, right? It's a great story. Congratulations. And I'd love to watch it as it grows. How do we get in touch, follow you online, all that stuff, please?
Thank you, my friend. To get in touch with me, you can find me at Justin_Buonimo. The spelling of this will be in the show notes. You can on Instagram. That's where I'm most active. But then also our website is journeytofinancialfreedom.co, not .com, drop the M, .co. And there's a bunch of information about the business and our program on that website as well.
Thank you so very much. Great stuff, Justin. And we'd love to have you back. Take care.
Thank you, my friend. Thank you so much for having me.
And we will be right back. And welcome back to School for Startups Radio again. Thank you so much for being with us today. I am very excited to introduce you to my first guest. It's one of those people that, as they say, needs absolutely no introduction. Brian Tracy has presented and has educated over 5 million people in 40 countries during his career as a motivational and developmental speaker. He teaches 250,000 people a year with his keynotes and seminars, and he has written another new book, which is out. He has got, I quit counting after like 10 or 12. He has a new book out called Get Smart, How to Think and Act Like the Most Successful and Highest Paid People in Every Field. Sir, welcome to the show. It is our honor.
Thank you. Excuse me. It's a great pleasure to be with you. Thank you.
Well, thank you, and I'm looking forward to talking to you. You know, all of the books, you have a book on goals and a book on how to become a speaker and self-discipline. Procrastination. This book seems a little bit different. Instead of a skill, it's teaching us actually how to think, isn't it?
Yes. Well, everything I've ever done has been to help people to achieve their goals faster by giving them the practical, proven ideas used by the most successful people in every field. And now it runs us into the millions. I've sold more than 10 million books in 42 languages. And people just come back and say, this new idea changed my life. And so I just teach us practical things. You know, what I found more than anything else, which is what led to this book, Get Smart, I was going to call it Thinking for a Change, but the title had already been taken. So Get Smart shows you 10 different ways of thinking and contrast them, the ways that successful people think and the ways that unsuccessful people think. And all you have to do is shift, like turning the direction of a searchlight, shift your thinking from one way to another way, and your whole life transforms.
I love it. Of the 10, is there one that's most important? Is there one way of thinking that supersedes all of the others? For example, result versus activity, thinking. Is there one that's the most important?
Well, it already depends. Sort of like if you go to the doctor and you're not feeling, you don't have any energy, and the doctor does a blood test and comes back and says, well, you've got a deficiency in these minerals or these vitamins and so on. It's very much a personal thing. My favorite starting point that the chapter starts with is long-term perspective versus short-term perspective. And this is based on more than 50 years at Harvard by Dr. Edward Banfield, one of the foremost professors in history. And what he did is he was trying to answer the question, my question, why are some people more successful than others? His academic question is, why is it that some groups move up socioeconomically, or in other words, earn more money, generation by generation, and the most don't? 20% do, 80% of people, if they start off in a working-class family, they stay in a working-class family, marry working-class people, have working-class kids, and it goes on generation after generation. But some will jump a generation. They'll go up from the middle class to the upper middle class to the rich in a single generation. Why is this? What Banfield found is only one factor, long-time perspective. He said these people basically had goals, long-term goals, and then what they would do, and there's been several top best-selling books written on this subject. One of them was called Competing for the Future, just for business strategy. They said long-term goals dramatically improve short-term decision-making. If you have a very clear idea of where you want to be in 5 years, then every minute of every day you say, is what I'm doing right now consistent with where I want to be in the future? And if it's not, stop doing it. Warren Buffett was once asked his secret of success, and he said, my secret is simple. I just say no to everything. And so, you know, I do time management programs and personal productivity programs all over the world. And I start off by saying, just say no. Stop doing things that are not leading you toward the things you want to achieve. And do only the things that are consistent with your own goals and your own desires. So this is what Banfield found in 50 years. It's taught people have a clear vision of their ideal life sometime in the future, which I teach in strategic planning programs. And then they come back to the present. And they make sure that everything they do today, tomorrow, is consistent with their long-term goals.
Is this why some cultures, perhaps the Japanese, who thrive in long-term planning, have succeeded so well?
They've been vastly successful. And, you know, I remember the president of Mitsubishi was asked at an international business conference, how long out do you set your strategic plans? And they said, he said 250 years, which shattered the American person asking him, is we think of where we want to be in 250 years. So, of course, once you get beyond 12 to 18 months today because of rapid change, you have to be more and more fuzzy. You have to be more general. Like you could say, for instance, we want our sales and profitability to grow at 25% per year. So therefore, we like to double within 3 years. So that's your general goal. But then the different things that you are going to have to do with rapidly changing information and technology will be different every week, every month. But the goal stays the same.
Brian, I am sure that a huge percentage of our listeners are going to be very interested in Chapter 9, Entrepreneurial Thinking versus Corporate Thinking. I hate those yes. JOBs. What is the thinking going on here?
Well, bureaucratic or business thinking is functional and transactional. You're part of a production line, only it's paper. You get your assignments, you do your assignments, you pass it on to the next person. You come to work at 8:30 and you go home at 5. Lunch is from 12 to 1 and coffee break is from 10 to 20. In other words, you're a company person, and you follow the company, and you go home. I'll give you a perfect example of this. It was a shock. It took me a long time to get over it. I was giving a seminar in Milwaukee, and they asked me to give a seminar that was on negotiating, communication, influence, or persuasion, personal productivity, a subject that appealed to everybody in every job. And then they went out and sold it. And toward the end of the sales, this is November, they stumbled into a government department, or a government department called them and said, look, we've got the money left in our training budget. We don't spend it. We don't get it next year. What you got? And they said, well, we have this program. They said, okay, we'll send 100 people to it. And they did. So I didn't know this, maybe 120. So I'm giving the seminar, and it goes to 5:30. And I'm rocking, rolling, and strolling, and giving the seminar and great examples, and people are laughing and taking notes, and there's beautiful workbooks and everything else. At 10 minutes to 5, throughout the audience, in groups, none of them were alone, in groups, 120 people stood up and walked out. Almost like there was a bomb scare. 120 people just got up and excused themselves, walked down the aisle, and walked out. I was stunned. That's not good for a speaker or any kind of a entertainer to have people in the audience just get up and walk out.
That could really bruise the ego.
Yes. So, you know, this is my show business. Keep on smiling. And I completed the seminar. And then I asked my host who put it together, Steve. I said, Steve, did you notice that? He said, yeah. He said, I said, what happened? Did I say something? I mean, did I offend them? He said, no. He explained to me what had happened. They're government servants. And government servants are allowed to stop working 10 minutes to 5 so they can get ready for quitting time at 5 o'clock. And it was exactly 10 minutes to 5, and they got up and walked out. Even though the stuff they were learning, negotiating, persuasion, all wonderful, helpful stuff for anybody in any field, they couldn't have cared less about learning. That is the corporate and bureaucratic mindset.
And that's our tax dollars at use. So unbelievably scary.
So now you look at the entrepreneurs. The entrepreneurs, now here's the critical thing, is some people, the top people, listening to this, they see themselves as responsible for their own future, responsible for their own income. They realize that they can only eat what they kill. If they don't get results, they don't eat. If they don't get results, they don't move ahead. So therefore, they're very hungry to learn how to get more and better results. They don't make excuses. They don't blame other people. They don't criticize. They accept responsibility. So when I go into a seminar, you could tell these people, because most of the people who come to my seminars, they move up front and fight for the front seats, and they take notes the whole time. Whereas people who are sent by their companies sit in the back seats and play with their telephone. You look at them, when we used to sell audio and video, audio programs at the back of the room, all the people that bought them were the entrepreneurs. And all the people that had been sent by their companies never bought a single thing, because their mindset was they are not responsible for their own development. If their company wants them to be better, they must pay for them to go to the course, and they must pay for their audio programs. And this mindset means that these people will always be poor. They will worry about money all their lives. Every morning when they get up, they start thinking about how little money they have. All day they think about their money. At night, they quarrel with their spouses about money. Number one reason for divorce in America is arguments about money. It's not over having too much. So
we have too much money. It's your fault.
So entrepreneurs have a particular mind view or attitude. Is they're always looking for products and services that they like that can help other people. That is the entrepreneurial mindset. They're like a radar screen scanning the horizon. They're always looking, where is there a product or service, idea or combination where we can put this together and give it to people, and they'll pay a certain amount for it, which will be more than the cost. The entrepreneurial instinct, by the way, I spent thousands of hours studying this. The entrepreneurial instinct is to see how they can bring together all the factors of production to produce a product or service at a price that is less than what the customer will be willing to pay. That's all entrepreneurs do, is they look for opportunities to combine resources at a price below what customers are willing to pay. And if they do that repeatedly, they make a lot of money. And if they don't, they don't. They try something else. Now, here's what most entrepreneurs, successful entrepreneurs, do. They don't have money, but they have time. And they invest what is called sweat equity. For a large company, it invests physical, or getting the financial capital. what an entrepreneur does is they invest human capital. And human capital is mental, emotional, and physical. They think and they plan. They put their hearts into it and they work long hours. Average entrepreneur works 12 hours a day, minimum 6 days a week, at least to get started. For me, I work 10 hours every day. And if I work less than 10 hours, like if I quit before 7 p.m., I start to feel, geez, I'm going to get caught. Somebody's going to catch me sloughing off. So my wife has to come in at 7 o'clock. And I say, oh, geez, is it time to do just one more little thing? You know, that's how entrepreneurs think, is they just work all the time. And but if you're doing what you love and you're doing it and getting better and better at it, is what they have found. If a sense of progress is the primary motivator in the human being. If you're doing what you love and you're getting better and you're making progress, you're continually motivated. It's almost like your engine is constantly being refurbished with nitroglycerin. You've got this unbroken stream of energy.
Weren't you that way though, even when you worked for someone else, Brian?
Yeah, I was. Fortunately, it's something about entrepreneurs. Most entrepreneurs either come from an entrepreneurial family, so their mother or father was an entrepreneur, so they absorb through the skin the importance of being responsible and working hard and satisfying customers, and or they started in an entrepreneurial field when they were young. My first job, and I didn't know this, it was a blessing because my parents didn't have any money. I bought all my own clothes. All my own stuff for school. I bought everything that I ever bought from the age of 10 onward from my own earnings. And when I was 10, my parents just didn't have the money. I wanted clothes to go to school. And so in the summertime, I would go from door to door with a hoe. You know what a hoe is? You ever had a hoe?
Yes, of course.
It's not one of those. Okay, keep your mind focused. I go from door to door with a hoe, and I offer to chop weeds. For 25 cents an hour way back in the day. And I would get jobs. I remember once this woman hired me to hoe an entire, backyard. It was overgrown like a jungle. And I worked, for a whole week. I would go there and I would hoe weeds, throw strokes, chuck. Oh, I would do that and pile them up. And I did that for a whole, I still remember that job. And at the end of the week, I got all my money. I was making more than anybody. So I was an entrepreneur from the age of 10. Then I delivered newspapers and I collected bottles. And then I sold Christmas tree tickets and I sold soap. I mean, I was always doing something to earn money. And so when you become an adult, it's natural that you say, all right, how can I earn money? Well, you go out and sell something. And if you don't have something to sell, you create something and then go out and sell it. And since I started door to door, I went door to door. most people say go door to door, but what if they say no? Well, of course they're going to say. Most of them will say no, and they'll also tell you that your parents weren't married and wave at you with one finger and everything else. But that's the price of being successful as an entrepreneur. Be willing to, suck it up and take it and move on.
I love that story. That is amazing, Brian. Thank you for sharing that with us. We have time for one more of the get smart ways that people can change their thinking. And this one is probably the most apropos for our audience. Creative thinking versus mechanical thinking. How can we train ourselves to be more creative, Brian?
All right. Now, this is one of the, there's all kinds of Nobel Prize winning research on the way brains work. Is human beings are lazy, so they jump to conclusions. They say, here's the problem, this must be the solution, without stopping and thinking that this may not be the solution at all. I used to say that people who think mechanically see a fire, and they say, well, I'll just throw that bucket of stuff on the fire, but the bucket's gasoline. And so now they've got a far worse problem than when they started off with. So creative thinking is where you look at all the different ways of approaching a problem or a difficulty, including asking, is this really a problem or is this possibly an opportunity? Some of the greatest breakthroughs in history look like a massive failure, but as a result, the person did something differently. Here's a great example. One of the richest people in Forbes magazine is this guy was a wildcatter, and he worked on the Oklahoma oil rigs, and He got a share of a successful oil find. And he took his money, bought his own oil rig, and he went out. And he began drilling for oil. He got some oil leases and so on. And he wasn't very successful. He drilled dry holes, as they call it, dry holes. And then he had this idea that what if the holes, and he found that most of the oil fields had been tapped out after a while. What if there was bigger oil fields below the main oil, below the smaller oil fields? What if way down deep below the oil field that had been tapped out and abandoned, there was actually the real oil field, which was much larger? And so he shared this idea with some of his friends in the oil patch, and they all laughed in his face. He said, well, it could be, you know, if there's oil on the top, maybe that oil percolated up from even bigger patch, bigger pools below. Well, nobody would support him, so he risked all of his money, and finally, and he dug a well. He went down 5,000 feet. He went down 5,000 feet, and he hit one of the biggest oil pools in history, became one of the richest men in America. And his way of oil drilling is practiced by all the major oil companies. If they go for the shallow pool, and then they go for the deep pools, and they have to dig and dig and dig and dig and dig, maybe have to go 1,000 or 2,000 feet with nothing but dirt, and then suddenly they hit the big one and transform the whole world of oil production. So one of the things that I say to my entrepreneurs is dig deeper, work harder, spend longer hours. Remember, the richest person in the world, one of the richest people in the world, got there by just drilling deeper than anyone else, just working harder, just putting more pressure on themselves. I've spoken, when they did the interviews on self-made entrepreneurial millionaires, they asked different people, why do you think you became a millionaire in your field? There's, you know, thousands of people in your field. And he said, well, one of the millionaire next door, one of the stories was, well, the other people had better education. They came from better families. They got cars when they turned 16. I didn't have any of that. He said, but I had the willingness to work. He said, so while they had all the advantages, I could work harder than them. And I could work harder than them for a long time. The reason I'm rich is because I just work harder than they do. And the final report from Sammy and Danko on self-made millionaires, 85% of millionaires attribute their success to hard work. Not luck or being in the right place at the right time. They just work harder than anybody else longer.
Who was the oil driller? I'm sorry, Brian. Did you give us the name of who the oil driller was?
I don't recall the name. It was in a Fortune magazine article, and I read 3 hours a day.
Right.
And I've read 150,000 hours in 50 years, so I don't remember every name.
Well, I can certainly understand that. Brian, how can we follow you on social media, get a copy of your most recent book, Get Smart?
Well, always buy your books at Barnes & Noble, bookstores, or Amazon. I don't need to tell people that. But if you come to my website, briantracy.com, we'll send you a 12-step guide to setting and achieving goals. It's based on my literally 30, 40 years of research into the field. It's a condensation of my book. It's really a life changer, and it's free. So I want everybody, what changed my life, took me from rags to non-rags, I say, was learning about goals. And what I put into this free book that you can download is a formula that you can use to set and achieve any goal for the rest of your life. So start there. Start with that. It's BrianTracy.com.
Thank you so much for being with us. I greatly appreciate it, and we were honored to have some of your time. Congratulations on the book, and I hope it's one of those products that just sells lots and lots of copies for you.
Thank you, Jim. Have a great day.
We're out of time. Have a great one, everyone. Bye.